House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, April 22nd. We have some changes on the agenda, so House Bill 2886 is going to go off the agenda. House Bill 2790 is going to be carried over until April 23rd. House Bill 2271 is carried over until the 27th. And House Bill 2802 will be carried over until the 27th.
Which one? What was the last one?
The last one, 2802.
I think it's these three.
71.
What was the one for that dude?
2279.
Yeah. Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3292.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3292 adds a surcharge for property and motor vehicle insurance, establishes the insurance surcharge public safety fund that will continuously be appropriated to the Criminal Justice Commission to fund public safety grants for local governments, requires the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to adopt standards and rules for the grant program. It has a dash one amendment that specifies that any amounts that are not above those necessary for complying with the statutory obligation to carry car insurance must comply with Article 9, Section 3A over the Oregon Constitution, which requires motor vehicle taxes to be used on roads. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Sean Miller, John Powell, and Edward Davis. But first,
so to speak. I think he's waiting.
Okay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jefferson Smith, representing District 47. For the last several weeks, in fact now a few months, this committee has heard a variety of proposals I think we like, but that we either stopped or knew would be stopped soon because of the lack of funds to pay for them. That included discussions about what should be the relevant penalties for rapists and other violent criminals. It included trainings for campus safety officers. It included the crime for insurance fraud. It included DUII penalties and making sure we are in line with other states with regard to how lax or strong our DUII protections are. And had I spent more time to put together a list, we would have a very long list. In fact, I would say that list is almost as long as every public safety bill we've had that had any teeth. And we have either decided to not work the bill, or we have passed it on to Ways and Means with the comfort that that bill would die soon for lack of money. Sometimes that might give us comfort because we might have had doubt with the bill. Most oftentimes, it alleviated our conscience because we thought it should happen, and we knew that it wouldn't in these tough economic times. It seems like some discussion of revenue is warranted with all the discussions of spending that we have had in our committee, even if it were only wishful spending. 3292 is a constituent bill that was brought to me by somebody who is a very strong public policy mind. He will speak on the record in a moment. His name is Rich Rogers. And he will talk more about the details, but it's a relatively simple bill. Create a surcharge on insurance that would go dedicated to public safety. There will be a couple of critiques. They will come from many sources. In fact, I suspect anybody who makes money doing insurance would not like this bill. And that doesn't surprise me. If I were them, I would only be doing my clients a service if I did everything I could to make sure we didn't increase costs for insurance consumers or increase costs for insurance companies or other derivatives thereof. Let me say, however, why I don't think this is an unfair conversation or an unfair discussion of the tax and why I was willing to lend my name of support to Mr. Rogers' idea. Mr. Rogers, the most simple link is this, and that is that anything we can do, almost anything, many things we can do in the public safety realm can help reduce safety costs and even insurance costs to consumers and individuals. If we can do a better job of crime prevention, if we can do a better job of investigation, if we can do a better job of punishment, if we can do a better job of deterrence, We can reduce costs to insurance companies and purchasers of insurance policies. So I hope there's a conversation we'll have. There could be any number of outcomes, but I hope it's a conversation we will at least let get over to the Revenue Committee that can have a conversation of this in line with other revenue conversations they're going to have.
Are there any questions?
Thanks very much.
Sean Miller, John Powell, and Edward Davis, please. Oh, I'm sorry. If I could, I have the proponents go first on this. Rich Rogers and Mary Botkin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rich Rogers. I'm a resident of Portland and a small business owner. I worked for quite a few years as a policy and budget advisor to the fire commissioner in Portland. That's kind of my background that made me interested in this idea. And I want to take a minute to thank Representative Smith for the spirit in which this idea was brought forward. He sat down with a group of people and put words out saying he wanted to get ideas. We all center in our ideas based on our experience and our ideas. And it's really, I guess, you know, just a pleasant surprise to be here in front of you with a bill that's the product of that kind of innovative thinking, being open to creative ideas. And I hope this is a good one. What you have is a rough sketch of an idea that came from my experience working on public safety issues in Portland. And, you know, nobody likes to propose new fees or new taxes. Nobody likes to pay them. I sure don't. I've got a 2-year-old at home, and I'd rather be buying her, you know, toys than paying taxes. But we have to. And I think the goal is to try and set things up in a fair way, in a logical way, in a way that tries to link price signals and costs with the behavior that you're trying to control or stop, in this case, and that's property crime. We got a pretty clear signal from the voters that it matters to them, property crime. And I think Measure 57 has a provision that requires the legislature to establish a grant program for public safety for local governments. And to be honest with you, I'm not tracking this closely enough to know if you've landed on a vehicle, but I think something like this could be a good fit for that. By linking the cost, the public safety costs of fighting property crime to insurance, you're really linking parts of a system that aren't linked up right now. Right now, we dedicate the revenue that we can find to police and fire and corrections and 911 and the systems that we use for public safety. And that's to protect, you know, people and their physical health, but also to protect property. And we do that by fighting crime, by stopping speeding, fighting drunk driving, insurance fraud, the whole list of things that I'm sure you talk about in a lot of depth. But we find the resources that we can. It's a messy process, and we give it to them. And then on the insurance side, we cover the losses when things happen. If a car gets stolen, odds are, in a lot of communities, the resources aren't there to investigate it and put a stop to it. It's just going to be a loss. And what this idea does, hopefully, is link those things up so that there are dedicated resources that are designed to reduce insurance losses. So if done right, I think this could result in no increases and maybe even some reductions. If you have dedicated resources to stopping car theft, more traffic safety, arson investigators, public education on the fire side, you know, the corrections and judiciary resources that you need to effectively fight property crime, I think you could see some reductions in insurance rates. And so that's the idea. It's a rough concept. I'm happy to entertain any questions that you have. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question, if not for you, from those who have a longer memory than I of this process. Didn't the governor actually in the last election cycle propose an insurance surcharge, dedicated funding to state troopers, and it was rejected for various reasons?
Yes, and they've taken care of that in this one. That was, you can't have insurance that is required, that the state requires you to carry in your car. You can't then tax that other than to have any taxation go to the highway fund. This says taxes only the amount of car insurance that's over and above the required minimums.
I see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with AFSCME Council 75, and we're here in support of Mr. Rogers' bill. we actually think it's a pretty good idea to start establishing some sort of dedicated funding for public safety needs. Local governments are struggling right now to try and figure out how to fund their basic services, and public safety is probably one of, in our view, one of the most important services that local government provides. When you look at ways to fund this, you know, sometimes somebody outside of the building comes up with an innovative way, and I know that Mr. Rogers and I are the only two people in the room probably that are supporting this bill, but that's okay. You know, David and Goliath, sometimes David wins. You know, when we look back and I see the challenges that our local governments have faced with the passage of ballot measure 5, then you look at, you know, sort of rearranging services, trying to figure out a way to take care of them. You know, we sent out money so that we could build jails, and in Multnomah County we built a jail without a plan to operate it. And we don't have any money to operate it, so we have a vacant building. We passed ballot measure 57 as a way to sort of try and get a handle on property crimes, but we can't put them in Wapato because Wapato doesn't have anybody staffing it. You know, there's a funding capacity issue, and ballot measure 5 made it worse, probably made it systemic at this point, and so we need to figure out a way to find alternative funding sources, and this is certainly one of those ways that maybe won't get out of the legislature, but certainly ought to be part of the discussion. And if it only goes to revenue for a part of the discussion, I think it's worthwhile. I would be remiss if I did not say this, though. As one of the original authors of the 911 surcharge to fund 911 services, which has been a smashing success for all over Oregon, I would like to be sure that somewhere in this bill there is some protection that the funds, if it should pass and if those funds are secured, that they are not swept at some point as excess revenue in an account that doesn't really need them. You know, I think that has been my biggest concern, is that as we look at dedicated funding, let's make sure the funding is dedicated and that it doesn't become funding for something else or somebody else's project. And that would be the only change that I would make in this bill, and we don't have to make it here. You know, but that would be my only caution to the committee, is that that's my only concern, is that we not sweep the money and put it somewhere where people don't expect it to go.
I don't know if it's one of these or Representative Smith, but my only question on this was, why was the OJC chosen as the Criminal Justice Commission chosen to be the repository of these funds?
The conversations I had with legislative counsel, just to share the idea with them, like I said, I think what you have in front of you is a sketch. It's a broad idea. There's no magic to that designation. The principles that I guess I would encourage you to look at would be, use empirical evidence to say, make sure the money goes to things that are going to stop property losses so that you control and reduce insurance premiums, and try to set it up so it's adaptable over time, because the sources of your property losses and the types of property crimes that would happen over time will change. And so being flexible and not being specific in the statute, I think, were some of the guiding principles that we talked about.
Thank you. I just wanted to be clear there wasn't a compelling reason to...
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sean Miller, John Powell, and Edward Davis, please.
I don't care. to you. All right. My name is Edward Davis. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for hearing us. I'm representing the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers of Oregon, and we are in opposition to this bill, not because the insurance industry is opposed to public safety and improvement of fire protection and strong dealing with the criminal behavior. However, the concept of this bill, in our opinion, is a deterrent to people who are already doing the right thing in terms of trying to protect themselves and the public. For example, the financial responsibility laws deal with the minimum liability insurance you carry, which is to protect other people, not yourself, and the damage to your own car. It has nothing to do with the theft of your car. So I can buy an insurance policy. I may or may not choose to insure the theft against my own vehicle. Issues regarding per policy surcharges just create an amazing inequity from company to company and from buyer to buyer. We talk about David and Goliath. Frankly, the David here is every single individual policyholder in the state who would be asked to pay a surcharge on a per policy basis. If I'm insured with State Farm and have three vehicles, I may have three separate policies. If I'm a large commercial insured, I may have one policy covering 50 vehicles. Same with property. I may have several policies covering multiple properties, or I may have a single policy covering a blanket list of properties. So the reality is the goal of trying to find funds to meet these needs is certainly not one we're opposed to. However, using insurance policies as an approach seems to us an easy scapegoat because the insurance industry certainly is not high on most people's most favored list. So we applaud the goal, but don't think this is the right vehicle. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Liberty Mutual and its affiliate companies and State Farm Insurance Companies. Mr. Chairman, first I need to declare a conflict. Usually lobbyists don't have to do that. I do. I represent the sheriffs of Oregon, and I wrote a conflict letter to the sheriffs and a copied State Farm. And my method of determining who I represent is who I've represented the longest. In this case, it was the insurers. To my surprise, unanimously, the Legislative Committee of the Oregon Sheriff's Association wrote back and said, no problem, we oppose the bill as well. So I don't have a conflict, but I thought that question would probably come up. Mr. Chairman and members, the history of taxing or surcharging insurance policies is replete with attempts over the years. Some people in the building who've been here longer than I would add to this list. But it was mentioned earlier, the governor in the last two sessions, in the 03 and 05 session anyway, had specific bills introduced to tax auto insurance. And as you had mentioned, Mr. Chair, there's a problem on the auto side because of the constitutional requirement that a tax on an automobile or the use of an automobile must accrue to the highway fund for construction purposes. That's why the state police cannot be funded out of that fund. And our legal counsel would argue with the opinion that you can tax, that the Constitution says you can tax part of a tax on the use of an automobile, because it doesn't say that. Secondarily, we think that logic was based on an informal opinion that the Attorney General wrote in 1981 about ego plates as to whether or not the additional money you pay for an ego plate on your car has to accrue to the highway fund. And the Attorney General opined in that informal opinion that indeed you did not, because a person was choosing something above their basic cost of a license plate. The problem with that is an entirely voluntary act. Insurance and the amount of insurance you have is not involuntary. If you finance your car, for example, you have to carry physical damage on it by contract. You can't. You cannot refuse to do that. Secondly, I had a client at one time that required that I carry $1 million worth of auto liability insurance And so there are in many cases where people are required to have higher limits of insurance than the state minimum. And for the most part, most people actually do carry higher limits to protect their assets in case they're at fault in an accident. But there have been many proposals to tax insurance. It's one of the reasons we oppose getting started on that list. Remember the tax, list of things on our tax forms that people could give a dollar to this fund, and that pretty soon that list got larger and larger and larger. If you check your phone bill when you get it next time, you'll see several taxes and fees from the federal government to state government on that bill. In my office, out of a $200 minimum monthly charge for four lines, over 30% of that is taxes and fees before I use it. But we've had surcharges for earthquake, emergency management system, orphan site chemical cleanup, auto theft units, auto fraud units, head injury, and go on and on of the number of these types of bills that have been introduced over the years. And I would just simply close with, when this first, the auto surcharge started a few years ago, I did commission a poll, and this form of taxation is extremely unpopular. It goes way beyond what I thought it would show. And 2 years later, in 2005, KATU Television commissioned their own independent poll, and it had clearly 74% of the people oppose it. In our poll, there was not one demographic in the poll that supported it. There was not one political party, one gender in the state. No one supported the passage of that kind of surcharge. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here today on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association. It's a trade association made up of about 40% of the property casualty insurance policies in Oregon. And here today in opposition of House Bill 3292. And just a few points I'll just add to Mr. Powell's testimony. And, you know, obviously we're concerned about the policyholders paying entirely for this program, which benefits all Oregon citizens. I think, you know, not just the insurance consumers. But there has been some recent studies on a correlation between an increase in uninsured drivers and so I just want to point out that as the unemployment rate increases, the correlation between the unemployment rate and the uninsured drivers, and now that we're at 12.1%, I believe, is the recent number of unemployment, we are having a more of an impact on the uninsured drivers out there, which would increase the cost of the policyholders and their uninsured motorist coverage in Oregon. So there's been a few other committees in this legislature that has looked at some of these insurance issues. I know the Consumer Protection Committee has had several issues involving insurance that has passed out that I know that have gone through the process that would increase personal injury protection coverage, PIP coverage. And we're concerned about, as you increase the amount of insurance, we will be increasing the amount of uninsured drivers out there. I know Mr. Rogers talked about auto theft as one of the examples, and I know we're not opposed to having some form of dedicated funds going to specific programs, but there is alternatives. I know the state of Washington in 2007 created an auto theft task force, and even though an insurance surcharge was considered at the time, it was dropped, and what they went ahead and did is put a surcharge on traffic infractions, which would be dedicated for auto theft, and that program's working successfully up in the state of Washington. So there is some alternatives. I think I'll close, Mr. Chairman, just to say that there is some just unresolved questions with some of the language in the bill. Some of the questions I've received were, when a policy, what happens to a policy or pays the full amount of the policy but refuses to pay for the surcharge? Is the insurer required to pay it on their behalf, uncompensated? Is the insurer required to pay it on their, are they allowed to cancel or non-renew the policyholder based on the non-payment of the surcharge? What happens to a paid surcharge when a policy is canceled or non-renewed? Is a refund required at that point? Since in the bill, I know it's required to remit it every monthly. And is the insurer exposed to litigation for failing to refund a surcharge? You know, and so, you know, along with that paid premium. So there's just a lot of questions that have been raised just on some of the practical applications that, and I don't know the answers to it. I just wanted to share with the committee, and I thank you for, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Smith.
You pulled the bill?
Mr. Chairman? You're talking to me?
Yeah.
No. Mr. Chairman and Representative Smith. We pulled the surcharge that the governor had.
Gotcha. What year?
That was in 2003, and the KATU one was 2005.
Great. Yeah, that information would be helpful to get. I misheard. I think that was my only question, and I appreciate your guys' testimony. And I know you'll fight tooth and nail to stop any sort of cost to the insurance industry, and I think that's what you got to do to represent your clients. And totally understand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I don't think this surcharge should be categorized as a cost to the insurance industry. It's a cost to the insurance consumer.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to say on the record, I disagree. I think the point would be that we'd be able to fund stuff that would help the insurance consumer pay lower premiums over time. And I understand the insurance industry doesn't want that to be a route to do that. But of course, that's the crux of the debate.
Okay, thank you. Javier Torres, Rick Kingsley, and Lana Butterfield, please.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, can I make a comment?
Yes, you can. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to commend Representative Smith for bringing this forward. I think that the one thing that we're seeing in public safety is that with the $4.4 billion hole, we've got a heck of a challenge on our hands. And I think the one thing we've seen is that the criminal justice system has really lost a lot of its balance in the last 15 years or so. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield, and I'm the lobbyist for the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon, Idaho. They are a statewide group of independent insurance agents, and they have a little bit different perspective than the representatives from the carriers that you heard from. These are folks who own the rights to the renewals of their policies. They sell for more than one company. And they are really on the front lines, Main Street America. They talk face-to-face to customers every day. You've heard a lot of good, a lot of testimony in opposition that gave you some good, solid reasons, and I've listed some of those in my testimony, but I mostly wanted to bring you our opposition to House Bill 3292 on behalf of our customers. And I'm going to, first of all, share with you some of the letters that have been sent to members of the committee. I did not do a big grassroots effort, but I can, if need be. I promised the chair I would only ask a very select few, because I wanted to get some real reactions from people, letters in your file. Rather than go over all the reasons that the previous witnesses have given you for opposition, I'd like you to hear from a couple of the agents who deal directly with consumers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rich Kingsley. I own Kamak Kingsley Insurance Agency in Staten, Oregon. They've already talked about the fact that you can have one policy that covers a lot of trucks, for example, and then some companies have one policy on each car. One thing they didn't mention is the fact that not only are cars insured on auto policies, but you can have cars, motorhomes, trailers, camp trailers, campers, and just plain trailers, all included on an auto policy. Some companies, even though they write multiple autos on the policy, may be limited to, Safeco, for example, limited to four vehicles on a policy. So once you reach four vehicles, which could be two pickups and two campers, you buy a third vehicle, then you get another surcharge. That's going to hit families that have young drivers because they'll have multiple autos. And then you can have the next door neighbor that has all their cars insured on one policy. So it's not being, this doesn't get it to people evenly. It's unfair the way it's done. I understand what you're trying to do, and I urge you to vote no.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Javier Torres, and I'm an agent at Payless Auto Insurance. I'm speaking on behalf of my customers and myself as a consumer, and I oppose the bill for several reasons. As an agent, I find that a disproportionate percentage of my customers are living paycheck to paycheck. Many scramble to make their insurance payments, often paying on the very last day possible. Many insurers do not allow late payments, causing stress on working families who are struggling to find affordable insurance in their budgets. Recently, with the unemployment rate in Oregon, the struggle to maintain insurance for many Oregon families has increased. I find that many of my customers go to great lengths to pay and to find the cheapest insurance policy. This means that for an increase of a few dollars, they request for me to seek better rates. And I don't have a problem with that, of course. That's my job. My problem is that when reviewing the policies or their options, the state required minimums is always an option. And often they would reduce coverage, exposing them to financial risk in the case of a loss. I do not recommend this to them, and I am uncomfortable with the thought of policyholders stripping down their coverage, exposing their assets to save a few dollars. Any tax or fee or surcharge would not necessarily mean that Oregon would have more uninsured drivers, but it could have an impact on underinsured drivers. As a consumer, I believe that public safety is everyone's responsibility, not just those who drive responsibly or who own a home. Although I believe that public safety is an important issue, I do not believe that the answer is to put an individual's property coverage at odds with public safety. So I urge you to oppose the bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson?
Yeah. Lana, I don't. Were you here back in the early 90s? Do you recall Mary Botkin brought up the issue on the surcharge for 911, increasing it to 75 cents for access to 911?
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, I was here, but I didn't participate in that bill. We did testify in 2003 and 2007 when a bill similar to the one that Representative Smith has brought forward with the amendment came up, and opposed that at that time as well.
Okay. Thank you. My point being, Mr. Chair, with that is that I was deeply involved with communications with my old agency back then in the 90s, and I was deeply involved with the 911 community throughout the state as well. Representative Ken Strobeck was the champion for that bill back then, and there was a huge support from the 911 community. We have this bill here, and I appreciate what Representative Smith is attempting to do here for public safety, but I do not see the support from that group.
Okay, thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3292 and open a work session on 2434.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2434 was in front of you on February 25th, and it is the bill that decreases the statute of ultimate repose for large commercial structures from 10 years to 6 years. It has a -3 amendment, and the -3 amendment incorporates the -1 amendment that you saw before that exempts the Homeowners Association, but the -3 amendment also exempts public bodies. And this has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, and is ready to move today if you so choose. Thank you.
So no revenue, no fiscal.
No revenue, no fiscal. -3 amendment.
-3 amendment. Okay.
Okay. And I'll read the -3s. Yeah.
We do have. Mr. Chair, Drew Hagedorn, and I believe Paul Snyder are here if you want have questions about the amendment.
Colleagues, the -3 amendments, as you may recall, there was concerns about public buildings, and the -3 took care of that. There has been a consensus agreement by the parties on that.
Mr. Chair? Is this a delayed, the Edison High School opposition, is that sort of, you know, echo mistaken letter, or
well, they just came in today. I just received that message in a moment.
months ago.
Okay.
Just, if I may respond, yeah, Mr. Chair, just briefly reading it, it seems to still think that it does not apply to the Dash 3 amendment because it's asking for 10 years and this high school would be a public body and be at 10 years still.
Question. Is it private nonprofit school, is that accounted as is that part of an exemption in the bill?
That's a good question, actually. The ORS 174-109 covers state governments, local governments, and special districts. So actually, a private nonprofit would not be covered in the Dash 3.
Okay.
I think that's a good point.
Thanks.
Could we have Drew come up and Mr. Snyder just put it on the record that they agreed? And
okay, yeah, and Mr. Snyder, if you want to come up, so.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Drew Hagedorn for the record. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We've worked diligently with stakeholders since you last heard this bill to address those concerns. The Dash 3 is before you. Address the concerns presented by the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. That's the commentary there in Section 1, Sub B. It also addresses the concerns raised by public entities. Insofar as private entities are concerned, the 2008 Oregon Court of Appeals case, Waxman, affirmed prior case history that for original owners, the contract theory, that the discovery rule does not apply, and that the six-year statute of limitations for contract claims would bar a plaintiff from seeking damages against a contractor as an original owner under a contract theory. Under a tort theory, they would have to establish or substantiate some form of a special relationship. In the instance of a commercial construction contract where you have sort of a dominant owner bargaining relationship, a special relationship I don't think ever would be obtained. So generally speaking, for an original owner, they would be barred by the six-year statute of limitations. There would be no change there. And that's really what predicated our rationale for agreeing to retain the 10-year statute of ultimate repose for public entities, because the six-year statute of limitations does not apply to public entities per ORS 12.250. And so that's why we agreed and worked with the public entities to retain the 10-year statute of ultimate repose for them, because we, from the get-go, didn't want to encumber any of our original owners' rights under the bill.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we're satisfied with the Dash 3 amendments. And given Mr. Hagedorn's analysis of the Waxman case, with which we agree, it appears that what we wind up with at this point with these amendments is a 10-year statute of ultimate repose for public bodies, which in turn would also be a statute of limitations for public bodies.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Snyder, for working with them, trying to get that get the resolution made. I also heard from the trial lawyers today, and they have agreed to. So this is agreeable to them.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move the Dash 3s in the House Bill 2434.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 3s in House Bill 2434. Is there any discussion, any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2434 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2434 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
No.
Representative
Cameron? Yes. Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative
Krieger? Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr.
Chair.
Can I say something for the record? Yeah, Drew, I want to just say I really appreciate all the amendments. You've been working your tail off to get a piece of legislation through the votes and have not, and I've done, and I won't, you know, go out and campaign against the bill, and I think it's close. You've done some admirable work. I do. This was the very thing I was worried about and gave me a little bit of pause, and I know that I had said that we could get a consensus. Maybe that's just impossible, but you know, I'd be more comfortable maybe it was 8 years or whatever. Just wanted to say that on the record because I do want to apply. Any time we have an advocate who works their tail off to get a bill that is, you know, a more moderate bill, I think that needs to be, you know, needs to be rewarded and appreciated. And even though I voted no, I wanted to say thanks.
Let's go. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, thank you for those comments, and I appreciate all the work this committee's done and the other stakeholders. Everyone's been great to work with, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Motion carries. Representative Westnett, will be a carrier. I think I did. Open a work session on House Bill 2585.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We heard House Bill 2585 on March 11th. This one repeals the prohibition on class actions for unlawful trade practices, Truth in Lending Act, and similar statutes. Applies retroactively unless a judgment was entered before the date of the enactment. Declares emergency effective on passage. The -1 amendment, which is before you today, adds language in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act that allows for statutory damages only if plaintiffs can show members have suffered an ascertainable loss as a result of reckless or knowing use of an unlawful practice. We have no revenue impact on this. There's a minimal fiscal impact. We have Scott Shore here in the audience if we have any questions about the -1 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, much as I'd enjoy grilling Mr. Shore on the record, I have no questions.
I accept a motion to adopt the -1s.
I move the -1.
Okay. Representative Garrett moves we adopt the -1s in House Bill 2585. Hearing no objection, so ordered. Ready to go.
Chair.
Representative Weston.
I apologize. I didn't look at the -1. I will be against the bill. Okay. So.
Class. Chair, I move House Bill 2585 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Garrett moves House Bill 2585 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Studer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wissett?
No.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Just a moment, please. Representative
Mr. Chair, before you drop it, I'd like to switch my vote to no.
Okay, Representative Cameron votes no. Motion carries. Representative Barton, would you carry that first?
In all seriousness, Mr. Chair, much as I enjoy, I'd be very pleased to carry this bill, though I must credit my colleague, Representative Garrett, I think, sort of an architect of the amendment. Is that fair? I'm not kidding, actually.
Garrett will be
if that is yours and Representative Barton's wish.
Representative Garrett will be the carrier. Thank you. So, we've got some of the spills. Committee will stand at ease for a few minutes.
Diane, can you call Bill?
Committee to order. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 2335. Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2335 comes to you from the Oregon District Attorneys Association. You may remember this bill from last week. This relates to parole hearings and basically would say that if you've been denied a parole hearing within 2 years, your next hearing would be no sooner than 2 years and more likely somewhere between 2 and 10. You have the Dash 6 amendments in front of you, which would replace the Dash 5. You also have a opinion letter from Legislative Counsel's Office saying that, and you may remember the discussion we had the last time between Darren Stanford and Bronson James concerning the constitutionality of it, and the members, too, discussing whether, in fact, it was constitutional. We got an opinion letter from Legislative Counsel's Office stating that their opinion it is constitutional. If I could go through the Dash 6 amendments, and I know Representative Garrett has put some work into this, too. So,
you can summarize it for us.
Sure. What we do is that Section 1 relates to murder and aggravated murder. In the language, it differs here, and it's throughout in the three different sections, because you have murder, aggravated murder, then you have those that have been on parole, sentenced before 1989 under the parole system, and then after that you have dangerous offenders. Language is similar in all of it, but to a certain extent. And this basically would say that the board may not grant the prisoner a hearing that is more than 2 years from the date the petition is denied unless the board finds it is not reasonable to expect that the prisoner would be granted a change in terms of confinement before the date of the subsequent hearing. That appears throughout the bill. And then going over to page 2, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, after the board grants a prisoner a hearing that is more than 2 years from the date the petition is denied, and when the board denies a petition for an interim hearing, the board shall issue a final order. The order shall be accompanied by a finding of facts and conclusion of law. The finding of facts shall consist of a concise statement of the underlying facts supporting the findings as to each contested issue of the fact and as to each ultimate fact required to support the board's order. Unless the prisoner bears the burden of persuasion, the order shall include findings necessary to deny the prisoner a change in terms of confinement for a period of time when the prisoner would be presumed to be eligible for change in the terms of confinement. As chairman of the committee, this language is intended to show that the prisoner has had an opportunity to make his case and that they have made findings of fact and law as to why it should be more than 2 years to the next parole hearing.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Garrett.
Legislative Council's opinion, and I want to thank them for turning that around pretty quickly. They conclude that with the bill with the Dash 5s would be more likely than not to survive a constitutional challenge, but that it is improved further with the Dash 6 amendments because we are requiring the board to make specific findings, accounting for the certain, in some cases, presumptions in favor of release. So it doesn't really change the policy direction of the bill. It just requires the board to justify its decision, and that will enable the statute, I think, to more readily survive a constitutional challenge.
Okay. So what we're looking at here today is the bill's not ready to move, but we would withdraw the Dash 5s and then adopt the Dash 6s. That's what we're looking for. So if I have a motion to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative,
maybe it'd be good to hear from the board as far as their workload to be able to meet the conditions of the Dash 6, because that's an additional change. Is
it's
that
going to help them? Be less hearings.
We could hear from if you want to just come up real quick.
I know they have a real light workload over there.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Stephen Powers, chairperson of the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. Representative Cameron, your question about the workload, I just received the Dash 6 amendments, and making findings of fact with respect to if we go further than 2 years to defer, I think would be, it would add additional workload to the board, to be clear, because we wouldn't have to make these findings otherwise. But that said, it would be something that we would have to do during deliberations, and that could mean it extends deliberations to a little longer, orders would be a little longer, and there would be consequences to any findings of fact that you have.
it's something that would have an impact, but as far as when we looked at fiscal, we said it'd be indeterminate, and we would that would be consistent with these Dash 6 amendments as well, because we can't quantify exactly all the other pieces that would be a part of it.
Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you, Mr. Powers, for your service, by the way. It's sad news to hear that you're changing. But there is a potential, then. It's hard to quantify, but even though it might require a little heavier workload to the finding of facts, in that case, you're actually putting off a parole for more than 2 years, so that would postpone some longer-term workload that may be coming up down the road, right?
Chair Barker, Representative Cameron, exactly. In terms of it would be more front-end work.
Right.
If then we're not having a hearing for 6 years after we've made those findings, we would be saving the time and for the hearing that would have happened on year four and or otherwise.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, too. I appreciate the work you're doing, that if somebody is moved over, they need to have a complete explanation of why. I think that's important for the person that's in custody. Okay, thank you, Mr. Howard.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to the Dash 6 is into House Bill 2335.
We need to take out the fires first, I think.
They're in it now?
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you do that?
Just recede. Motion
to recede.
Recede. To recede.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move to recede the Dash 5 from House Bill 2335.
Representative Wisnett moves to withdraw or to recede the Dash 5 amendments from House Bill 2335. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 6 is in the House Bill 2335.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 6 is in the House Bill 2335. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. No further business before the committee.
Good job.
Adjourned.